Hello, everyone, and welcome to Crush Course, the podcast for the wine curious. I'm your host, Sarah, coming to you from Sonoma Valley, California. Tourist season is just around the corner. Napa and Sonoma are tourist destinations year-round, but come springtime, it feels like there are more visitors than locals in the valleys. And while we are happy to have you here, there are a few things you need to know to make everyone happy. So I'm here to help you make the best of your wine country visit. There's lots to know, so let's get to it. I grew up in Los Angeles, and for many years in my youth, my family would make annual trips to Disneyland. It was just an hour away from home, so it was far enough away that we couldn't go all that often, but close enough that it wasn't too much of a planning hassle. My sister and I adored Disneyland. The rides, the food, the characters, those trips are some of the greatest memories of my childhood. Wine Country, if you think about it, is sort of the adult version of Disneyland. And when I say adult, I don't mean it in an explicit manner. I mean that instead of churros and castles, we have fine dining and picturesque estates. Although we do also have a castle. It's a place that, for Californians, is an easy and accessible escape from the routine, where you can indulge in something that you don't do every day. It can be a day trip, like how Disneyland was for me, or you can book a hotel and make a whole weekend out of it. For folks out of state, it's even more intriguing and is usually reserved for special occasions like engagements, anniversaries, or birthdays. See what I mean? Wine Country is a real-life Disneyland, but for tens of thousands of people who live here, it's not a destination. It's home. Which is why it can sometimes be frustrating when your commute is extended or your favorite restaurant is overpacked because of tourists. And trust me, we can spot you. No one puts quite as much effort into simultaneously blending in and standing out as tourists do. Though if you packed Blundstones and a Patagonia vest, good news, you are 90% there. Now, I have to preface this by saying, I don't mean any of this to sound negative or unappreciative. We appreciate each and every visitor that comes to Wine Country. This is a tourist destination, and the local economy depends on people coming to visit and drink the wine. My job would likely not exist if not for tourists. Wine is made to be consumed, and Wine Country was built to be enjoyed. It's actually nothing new. Napa and Sonoma Valleys have been the quaint country refuge for the Bay Area and beyond since the late 19th century, although back then they came for the healing hot springs. We're just providing a different type of liquid therapy today. So, as a resident of Wine Country, I have a few tips and tricks to share with you to make your next trip to Wine Country the best it can be for you, while also respecting the folks who call these valleys home. First things first, Wine Country has changed in the wake of the COVID pandemic. Most wineries are no longer accepting walk-in tastings, or at the very least, discouraging them, especially on weekends. Even though COVID restrictions have been loosened, many wineries found that planning tastings around pre-booked appointments made their lives a whole lot easier, so they kept the appointment-based system. Always check to make sure that if you need a reservation, that you make it and stick to it. If you're late, it will either shorten your experience or set the team back for the rest of the day. If it's a last minute or spontaneous trip, you can always call the winery and inquire for a same day tasting or be put on the wait list in case of a cancellation. Another reason to plan out your trip and make reservations is that a global pandemic has done nothing to deter folks from drinking. You know how there's all those videos of national parks going around where it's just herds of people ambling about, all trying to take the same photo for Instagram? That is what Wine Country is nowadays. In the spring and summer, our population booms with tourists. The warm weather, the idyllic setting, and an excuse to day drink? People come swarming. So if you don't make plans and reservations, you may not be able to get in anywhere for a tasting. Again, with COVID restrictions, wineries don't have as much flexibility with accommodating extra, unexpected guests. when you're making this plan, we gotta talk about taste buds. Yes, your taste buds. A lot of people don't know this, but your taste buds are a lot like a muscle. You have to be careful what you drink, how much, and in what order. My advice would be to start with something on the lighter side, like a sparkling wine producer, before diving into darker wines like Cabernet Sauvignon. Just like how you warm up your muscles, you have to warm up your palate with lighter white wines. If you jump right into the heavy reds, your palate will be shot before you leave the first location, and you won't really be able to properly enjoy any wines after that. It is going to take a little bit of research to figure out where you want to go so you can properly order and plan it all out. While there are plenty of iconic options along the main highway running through the valley, I have to point out that those will also likely be the most busy. And honestly, a lot of them make really similar styles of wine, so you may be having the same lineup of Chardonnay and Cabernet at each place. Search out smaller producers that are off the beaten path, and avoid wineries whose wines you can find in the grocery store. This is your chance to try wine that you can only have in Napa Valley. And trust me, there are a lot of wineries out there that were designed specifically to be tourist traps with less than fabulous wine. I don't want you falling for those. If you know someone, like me, who lives and or works in wine country, reach out for recommendations. Locals are a fabulous resource for this sort of thing. We know what places are just trying to get your money and which places are really passionate about sharing their wine. On a similar note, we gotta establish a limit for how many places to visit in a single day. 3. That's it. I will not budge on that number. Hear me out. Each tasting experience roughly takes 90 minutes. Factor in travel time, breakfast, lunch, and bathroom breaks. You will not have time for more than that. And really, no one wants to be rushing on a vacation. And from an inebriation perspective, you really shouldn't be doing more than that. You will consume roughly 2 glasses worth of wine at each location. So if you do make it to 3, that's 6 glasses in total. I probably have a higher alcohol tolerance than most, and I am ready for my pajamas and some chocolate after that much wine. Wineries want you to have fun, and they know that you will be more likely to sign up for a membership if they pour you a few extra splashes. Wine is a lot more intoxicating than you may think, so you gotta be careful. If you ever worry about drinking too much, don't be shy to ask for a spittoon. I know, spitting in public, it takes getting used to, but it's what the experts do. Sometimes wine tasting doesn't have to be so much wine drinking. And if you worry about overindulging, it's definitely the best option. Fun fact, tasting rooms have different alcohol licenses than bars and restaurants, and can often face stricter penalties for violating their permit. They can do this if they pour for a visually intoxicated person. So this is why hosts may refuse to serve you wine. They aren't being a fuddy-duddy, they're just looking out for the company. To help balance out all the delicious wine you'll be drinking, I gotta stress that you don't skimp on meals. Make sure to have a proper breakfast and lunch so that you have plenty of food in your stomach. And please drink plenty of water. If you're doing a multi-day trip, you need to make sure that you won't be too hungover for the next day and miss all those reservations you so wisely made for yourself. My recommended itinerary is breakfast, tasting 1, lunch, tasting 2 and 3, then dinner. It breaks up the day and spreads it out nicely. Before we move on, one more thing about tastings. Please plan to tip your host. I worked as a wine educator and host in Sonoma, and nothing was more soul-crushing than taking care of a group for over an hour, and they leave no tip or a painfully small one. You tip a waiter, you tip a bartender, and wine educators are both and then some. And while the base pay is often better than a waiter, a great deal of their income comes from tips. It's simply unkind to not tip your wine host. Though this may be regionally specific, many up-and-coming regions and more rural tasting rooms have less of a tipping culture than the established marketplaces of Napa and Sonoma. However, if you can anticipate paying that little bit extra in gratuity It will go a long way in making your host feel appreciated and valued. On that note, if you have an exceptional experience, please make sure to leave a review, reach out, and remember your host name. The recognition will mean the world to them. We also have to talk about transportation for your wine country getaway. I know that it seems romantic and idyllic to bike your way through wine country, wind in your hair, sunglasses on, the sun shining, but don't. It can be dangerous. Wine country is not as small or as rural as a lot of newcomers expect. I cannot tell you how many times I saw some poor group huffing and puffing along a busy highway in their springtime finery, trying to make it to their next tasting in time. Your best bet is to Uber or reserve a driver for the day. Unless you have a committed DD, don't expect to be sober enough to drive, or else you may be forced to abandon your car after the first tasting. And it's always best to keep an eye on Uber times while you're at your tasting. There aren't as many here as in the city, so it may take a while for your ride to arrive. Wine country, especially Napa Valley, is a premier wine and food destination. But in my opinion, the best stuff in town doesn't come with a triple or quadruple dollar sign. Same as with the wineries. A lot of the best food and activities aren't the most popular ones. You can take cheese making classes, go on a safari through a vineyard, or tour a brewery. Again, locals will have all the precious intel about what's worth it and what's not. We have tried out essentially every restaurant, bar, and activity that the valleys have to offer. You can ask your hotel concierge, your Airbnb host, or even your tasting host for recommendations. All of this is coming from the perspective of someone who, when I'm a tourist, wants to have a fully immersive experience in the place I visit. Sure, it's cool to see the monument or the museum that everyone knows, but I like to dig deeper, check out the hole-in-the-wall venues, and get recommendations from locals so I can go beyond the typical itinerary. That's how you will get the full experience of a place, because wine country has a lot more to offer than just wine. One more note before we wrap things up. Don't sign up for every wine club. Don't get me wrong, I love a wine club. However, after a few glasses of wine, it's pretty easy to be persuaded to sign up for these. Then, when you return home, you see the credit card charges and the shipping notifications and feel completely overwhelmed. Wineries want you to sign up for the wine clubs. It's a large chunk of their commerce, and tasting hosts will often get commission for signing folks up. There was one woman I hosted in my time as a wine educator who had a fabulous rule. Only one wine club per trip. Think of it as a continuous souvenir of your time in wine country. But wait, how am I supposed to pick just one when I'm trying a whole bunch in a weekend? Well, here's the thing. You don't have to sign up at your tasting. A lot of places will happily give you contact information before you leave. Mull it over, and once you've sobered up a bit, pick out a place you've liked best. And make sure to mention who your host was. They will get benefits for successfully wooing you. There's a lot more I could go into, but what it all boils down to is, don't be a jerk. We are happy to have you here, but we ask that you respect our home and the folks working here. Be patient, be kind, and be decent. After all, it is vacation, so all you really need to do is sit back, relax, and enjoy the wine. I hope you guys enjoyed my take on wine country travel tips. If there's anything that you think I missed out on or any questions that you may have, please feel free to shoot me a DM at Crush Course Podcast on Instagram. Would you guys like to have more episodes like these? Going through some of my earlier talking points, it got me thinking about making a Crush Course approved list of wineries for folks to visit. Maybe that will have to be something for the website. Oh, what was that? A Crush Course website? Yeah, I'm finally ready to share with you guys that I will be creating a Crush Course website this year. My hope is that it will be not only a catalog for all my episodes and episode scripts, but can also provide advice for choosing wines, travel in wine country, and much more. So make sure to stay tuned for that. I am so excited that I can finally do Wine of the Week again. This week, we are throwing it back to a bottle that I picked up back in November and finally opened up a few weekends ago. It is the Cuvée Kiki from Cuin Kiki Descombes. This is a Beaujolais made in the Beaujolais region of France with the Gamay Noir grape. It's chock full of red fruit with a bit of earthiness and just the right pop of acidity to really make it stand out amongst its peers. If you listen to my Beaujolais episode, you already know that I love a good Beaujolais, but this is easily my favorite. I can't really remember the first time I had this bottle. It must have been at least a few years ago, but it's one of those bottles that anytime I see it, I just have to buy it. Yeah, it's that good. I opened this bottle with a couple of friends over dinner and board games, and while we had some fantastic wines that night, I couldn't help but do a little happy dance when I took my first sip of this one. I have found this wine at Cadet and Backroom in Napa, and also a random foodware shop in Santa Rosa. It's kind of one of those bottles that eludes you the more you look for it, but you will know it by the man on the label holding a bottle of wine up in the air in triumph. And to be honest, that's kind of how I feel whenever I find a bottle for myself. That's it for this week. Now remember, when you visit wine country, make reservations, drink water, and don't be a jerk. Trust me, it will save everyone a headache. Next time, we are diving into biodynamic winemaking, cow horns and all. Is it backed by science, or is it just winemaking witchcraft? I'm Sarah, and this has been your crush course on what not to do in wine country. Until next time, cheers!